Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain. Support for WPR comes from Milwaukee Film, presenting the 16th Annual Milwaukee Film Festival, featuring local, national, and international films, April 11th through the 25th. Tickets are at mkefilm.org.
In 2006, scientists first identified the problem of colony collapse disorder, a phenomenon that left hives around the world empty as thousands upon thousands of bees abandoned their hives and died. In a world where 40% of the food we put in our mouths is pollinated by bees, the news was alarming. In their documentary Queen of the Sun, filmmakers John Betts and Taggart Siegel take a look at the ongoing global bee crisis and the place of the honeybee in the annals of history. I sat down to talk with them about the bee crisis. Siegel told me about some of the beekeepers they profiled in their film.
With the beekeepers that I chose, which were the biodynamic, organic beekeepers, they definitely had the sense of reverence already built in. They treat their bees really respectfully. They never feed them corn syrup or feed them pollen patties that are filled with chemicals. They will always like be in respect with the bees, which means like they won't take the honey until the spring. They let the bees live on that honey all winter long, and in the spring they'll take whatever's left over. So there's this sense of like what is good for the bees is good for us. And so they treat them with real respect, and that's what I really found. I mean, to the point sometimes that a person like Yvon Huchard tickles his bees with his mustache. Now, is that good for the bees? Well, in the film, it's very funny, and but I actually think the bees do enjoy that relationship that man has with bees.
I also was struck by the philosophy of the beekeeper, and I think this rang true with many of the beekeepers we met, that as you began to have a conversation with beekeepers, you realized there was this whole sort of worldview that opened up due to their just intense observation of bees. So, for instance, Johannes Wurtz, who is the beekeeper at the Gertianum in Switzerland, when he talks about the beehive, he talks about the bees as being this golden thread that ties our food system together, that ties nature together. And he views it in this very poetic way. And to me, it really gave me a glimpse into what it's like to be a beekeeper, that they see things in that unique way.
If you think that they opened up the tombs of Tutankhamun and honey that was 2,000 years old is still edible,
ooh,
there is a reverence to bees. There is also a reverence to the gods. Now, don't you think in some way that we should actually be revering them because they're actually keeping us alive as opposed to the other way around? They're absolutely beautiful creatures. They're God's creatures, and if we don't protect them, then we're not protecting ourselves.
The beekeepers you profile in your film are primarily biodynamic beekeepers. They stay away from pesticides and corn syrup, for instance. But as you paint it, it sounds like a big part of the problem we're seeing with the disappearance of bees and colony collapse disorder comes down to the practices of commercial beekeeping.
Yeah, in fact, the world of commercial beekeeping has taken a major turn in the past 50 or 60 years. We've gone from a culture of beekeepers who largely kept bees in their own local area. They may have taken hives to a neighboring farm, but that was back in a time when farms dotted the landscape, you know, across America. And now we're in a situation where farming has become this industrialized system. And in order to continue the pollination that's necessary for these huge fruit orchards, for instance, the almond orchards, we actually have to truck those bees in on semi-trucks by the hundreds, if not thousands, of hives to pollinate these vast fields. Because if we weren't to do that, those flowers, those blooming flowers, would not result in the fruit that we eat. So we're tied now to this system that's really artificial. And that's, I think, where a lot of the problems have been stemming from for commercial beekeepers.
And the monoculture climate of those almond orchards in California, right, is that it's not a problem while the bees are there pollinating the almond trees. They like the almond trees as well as they like anything. But once they're done with that, there's nothing there for them anymore.
Yes, in fact, for 50 weeks of the year, there's no food for the bees in these almond orchards because it's monoculture. It's only one tree, and there's no variety of any other food that can sustain the bees. So the bees have to be trucked in, unfortunately, in these monocultures. But to say that they like the almond pollen or nectar is it's where bees are fed this monoculture diet, and they are struggling with that because they're fed, they go from one monoculture to the next, and that is depleting their immune system because bees love diversity. They love to say, okay, this herb I need to go feed on, or this flower, this nectar, this is what's good for the hive. But instead, they're kind of forced into this labor that is not their choice, and they have to feed off of almonds, you know, flowers for 2 weeks, and then they're moved to the blueberries, and then they're moved to the apples. But it's really not good for them because a lot of these flowers actually have a great deal of pesticides in them.
So many of the problems we face come down to one thing, and that is monoculture. There are many attractions to monoculture. It's efficient, but from the point of view of nature, it's insane. And monocultures are the reason that the bees are struggling. And monoculture is the original sin of agriculture.
Now, the trouble with monoculture is it's an absolute distortion of the way an ecosystem works. Because what you do with a monoculture is you take your vibrant ecosystem, you destroy it, and then you put in place all the things that you just took out. So instead of having natural fertilizers in the soil, you add inorganic fertilizers. Instead of allowing a natural ecosystem around pests to develop, you have to use pesticide. So what's the connection with bees? As far as the industrial agricultural corporations are concerned, the solution that's being offered is to destroy the insects that make food possible. And this is the disaster that they're ready to force on us.
And this, you think, is what's at the root of a colony collapse disorder?
Well, there's been a number of studies, not just in the U.S., but in countries around the globe. Europe has also had a huge problem with decline of honeybee populations. And in Europe, they've noticed that these neonicotinoid pesticides are a culprit for bees. And as such, they've limited the use, sometimes banning it entirely, but certainly banning certain pesticide uses. And they're making progress in those countries and seeing results from that. Versus in the U.S., where the EPA itself, there was just recently a leak from the EPA that revealed that their own scientists have said that these pesticides are harmful for bees, yet they still allow a buyer who creates these pesticides to have this sort of intermediary license, this pending license that they have not brought out and said, yes, you can do it, but since it's pending, they're able to use these pesticides. So we're in a really, you know, negative situation in the U.S. right now.
And these neonicotinoids are neurotoxic. It affects their brain, their ability to navigate back to the beehive. And so if you really look at these neonicotinoids that are like feeding them nerve gas, they really get so sick that, you know, they cannot navigate back to the beehive, which is, I mean, it's so tragic to imagine that they can't find their way back to their home where their queen that they love so much is sitting there waiting for them. And the queen is all alone and with all the honey and everything, but the bees don't show up. And the scary thing about colony collapse disorder is once those bees don't show up again, there are no other ants or wasps that come in and invade that honey and steal the honey because they know that something's in that honey that is really toxic to them. And so it's an interesting study to sort of see how these neonicotinoids affect not only bees, but all these other sentient beings out there.
Honey was considered so sacred as a gift from the bees The honey was not sold until the end of the 19th or into the 20th century. Most of the honey was given away as a gift. It is one of the most beneficial and healing substances that we can imagine. It has enzymes, it has nutrients, it has trace minerals, and it has forces of the hexagonal, the silica forces in it. And silica is a substance in the Earth's mantle. About half of the Earth's mantle is silica. The silica in us is mainly in the sense organs. It is the sensing for what goes on in the surrounding. So the silica and the honey have a beneficial influence on our evolution.
Now, one of the other theories, as I understand it, about the sources of colony collapse disorder is they are being fed as they're moved on corn syrup. Now, we're told that people shouldn't be eating high fructose corn syrup, but we're feeding it to the bees?
Exactly. I mean, Michael Pollan, who's featured in Queen of the Sun, speaks into this, I think, in a really effective way. And he says that, you know, if you think about anything more viscerally offensive than feeding the creators of honey high fructose corn syrup. I mean, it's truly, I talked to one commercial beekeeper and I said, what are you putting into these hives before these blooms happen? Because they have to nourish the bees somehow before the blooms are happening. And he said, well, you know what's in Coca-Cola? It's the same thing we're putting in here. So it's a diet of Coca-Cola, if you will, that we're feeding to the bees.
So what needs to change if we are going to see a future world in which bees thrive?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to really wake up to the necessity of pollinators, to not see bees simply as and confuse them with hornets and wasps and think of them as something that stings us or be live in fear of the killer bee hype. But we really need to appreciate, first of all, what we owe to these pollinators. I think that's first and foremost the thing that needs to happen. But beyond that, there's a strong need to return to localized systems of food and smaller scale farming, to go back to the way it was 50 years ago in some respects. And I think that's the first step, is really attacking this issue of monoculture. But it's such a vast problem is part of the issue.
And Einstein said that we need to renew our sense of awe and reverence. And this renewed sense of reverence for nature is our way of healing our estrangement with nature that we have. So it seems like we need to return back to kind of that relationship with nature. And that could happen in our backyards. That could happen in every place that people live. They could actually give back to nature. And in my backyard, for example, I've created this little habitat that so many pollinators live there now, butterflies and hummingbirds and bees and bumblebees. They've all come back in the last year from the plantings that I've done with herbs and pollinator plants. And I have now bees in my backyard. So I've seen an example of like putting it to test, like what I could do to create sort of a small habitat in my backyard that is really beneficial for bees, but I think for everybody.
This is what people can do. People say that they can't keep bees. They're lying.
And look at that side, dripping with honey.
All these girlies, yeah, these girlies here, right, are putting everything back into the environment. Not me. I'm just helping them. And I just think it's so rewarding.
A clip from the documentary Queen of the Sun by John Betts and Taggart Siegel. If you'd like to find out more about their film, or anything else you hear this hour, stop by our website, ttbook.org.